Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time. Dig out the truth written between the lines. Her hair's still brick, cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining us today for Her Story number 29 is women's history scholar and museum educator Ashley Jensen. Ashley works at the Higgins Armory Museum in Massachusetts, the only dedicated museum of armor in the Western Hemisphere, housing one of the few significant collections of knightly armor outside of Europe. Her research focuses on women of the medieval and early modern European time period, and she has a particular interest in Queen Elizabeth I and the Elizabethan era. To learn more about Ashley and her work, you can visit her website, beingbess.blogspot.com, or you can visit the Higgins Armory website at higgins.org. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, who have you selected to share with us today?
Today, I would like to talk about Eleanor of Aquitaine. She was first the Queen of France and then the Queen of England, and in both roles, a true trailblazer.
Well, let's get started. Please share with us a little bit about Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Eleanor was born somewhere around 1124. By 1137, her mother, older brother, and father had all died, which left behind her and her sister. By default, Eleanor was now the sole heir to the vast and agriculturally rich Duchy of Aquitaine. As the wealthiest heiress in France, it was decided that Eleanor should marry the future King of England, Prince Louis. A few days after the wedding and coronation, Prince Louis' father, who was known as King Louis the Fat, died, and Eleanor and her new husband became King and Queen of France. In a mere 3 months, Eleanor had become orphaned, married, and became queen. Any lesser person would have been overwhelmed by these changes, but Eleanor took it all in stride. From the beginning, Eleanor and Louis' relationship was tense. They were ill-matched. Where Eleanor had been educated in all of the arts that were held sacred in the Duchy of Aquitaine, such as music, dance, poetry, Louis had been educated by Stoic monks. He preferred prayer to witty conversation. Still, Louis was besotted with his young bride, and Eleanor seems to have tolerated him, at least initially. By 1144, Eleanor had been married to Louis for 7 years with no living child to show for it. It has been questioned that perhaps she was pregnant once and had a miscarriage, but so far no surviving child. This was considered a failure on Eleanor's part. The relationship was tense, and things got worse when a dispute between Louis and the Pope caused him to be excommunicated. A year later, in 1145, Eleanor gave birth to the couple's first child, finally, a girl named Marie. Louis managed to reconcile with Rome, and that same year declared his intention to go on crusade. Now, Eleanor knew a golden opportunity when she saw one. While Louis had pledged himself to the crusade in an effort to cleanse his soul, Eleanor saw this as a way to go and tour the world. Eleanor donned a crusader's robe and knelt before the church officials and pledged herself and her vassals in Aquitaine to the cause. She received a blessing from the Pope himself. Eleanor and her retinue of ladies were to embark on the journey alongside the rest of the military. This was unheard of at the time. Eleanor defied the Pope's orders that all of the travelers should travel simply, and instead donned the most opulent attire for the journey. Through the course of her travels, Eleanor toured parts of Eastern Europe and the Middle East. This was at a time when most people didn't travel more than a few miles outside of the place they had been born. When Eleanor and Louis reached Antioch, they were greeted by Eleanor's kinsman, Ramon of Poitiers, By this point in the journey, Eleanor had seen and experienced many wonders of the world, and her feelings of importance and independence were likely growing. When Lily decided that the retinue should turn back to rendezvous with the German king, Eleanor tried to persuade him not to. She felt it was senseless to turn back after they had come so far, but she was also enjoying the company of her handsome and charismatic uncle, Ramon. While there is no proof that Eleanor and her uncle were anything more than having a happy family reunion, there is plenty of contemporary observations that remark on Eleanor's behavior, which they deem to be overly familiar. Eleanor was undaunted by what others were saying about her. And when Louis told Eleanor to pack her bags and come with him, she refused. When Louis tried again to persuade her, Eleanor publicly reminded him that they were related within the degrees of consanguinity, meaning that they had several relatives in common that made them too closely related. And she felt that it was against God's law that they remain married. At this point, Eleanor was essentially expressing her desire for a divorce and putting forth a reason why they should be divorced. Eleanor eventually cooperated, leaving with Louis to go meet up with the kings of Germany and Spain. Louis was done with crusading at this point, however, so while his men went on to besiege Damascus, he and Eleanor toured the Holy Land as pilgrims. Their way back to Europe, Eleanor was briefly captured at sea by the Greeks before being rescued. This was another exciting episode to add to her travel memories. Upon arriving in Rome, Eleanor reiterated her desire for divorce. Furious, the Pope forbid Eleanor and anyone else from casting doubt on the marriage by word or by writing. He orchestrated some type of reconciliation between the couple, and shortly after their return to France, a second daughter was born named Alice. In the coming years, Louis went to war with the young Duke, Henry of Normandy, who was son of another one of my favorite women in history, the Empress Matilda, and thus the rightful heir to the throne of England. In 1151, a peace treaty was brokered between Henry and Louis. Henry arrived at the French court as a gesture of good faith. This was the first time that Eleanor laid eyes on the man who would become her second husband. Against the Pope's orders, the validity of Eleanor and Louis's marriage had been investigated, and in 1152, an assembly of French bishops found it to be null and void, the marriage, based on consanguinity, the same technicality that Eleanor herself had brought up when they were in the Holy Land. Though Eleanor had received the freedom that she had campaigned for, the consequence was that she had to leave her daughters behind. Thankfully, years later, Eleanor and her daughters would reconnect. Eleanor was now, once again, a sought-after bride. All the prominent men in Europe wanted to make her their wife, but Eleanor had other plans. This time, she would negotiate her own husband. This husband had to come with the promise of a crown, since her last husband had been a king. Eleanor knew just the man, Henry of Normandy, who she had met before in Paris. He stood to claim the throne of England through his mother. The 28-year-old Eleanor brokered her own marriage to the 18-year-old Duke that she had met the summer before. This was what many historians agree to be some form of a love match, that they had developed some affection before when they had met. It must have been, because for an older woman to marry a younger man in this time period was relatively unheard of. As Henry's queen consort, Eleanor would wield considerable influence. Together, they governed a kingdom that stretched from Barfleur in the north to the Pyrenees in the south. In the first 15 years of their marriage, Henry and Eleanor had 8 children, which must have upset Louis, since in the 15 years of their marriage, she only had 2 daughters. When Eleanor was occupied with child-rearing, her mother-in-law, Matilda, who was still living, wielded considerable influence over Henry. But by 1166, Eleanor had given birth to her last child, John, who would be a future king of England, and the Empress herself had died. Now Eleanor could move to the forefront of English politics. In 1166, Eleanor made a visit to her native Aquitaine. Eleanor decided to take up residence there now that she was no longer producing and raising children, and exercised her hereditary right to govern as Duchess. By all accounts, Eleanor was a competent ruler in her own right. During this period, it's interesting that there are 15 surviving charters that are issued by Eleanor from the period of 1168 to 1171. There were probably more that have since been lost to us. Henry issued no charters for Aquitaine during this time, which tells us that he trusted his wife's judgment. Henry was not so accepting of his son's rights, however. Years before, he had allotted different lands to his sons that when they came into their majority, they would be able to rule independently. This would help Henry to cut down on the lands he himself had to govern. But by 1173, the princes were restless because they were no longer content to wait for the lands that they had been promised and had so far been denied. When Henry gave some of his heir, who was also named Henry, when he gave some of young Henry's lands to his youngest son, John, young Henry was furious. So he did something quite drastic. He gathered his other brothers and traveled to his mother, Eleanor's first husband, King Louis, for help, which of course raised more than a few eyebrows. While Eleanor may not have been involved in her son's rebellion initially, she became so now. Eleanor's motives for going against her king and husband remain unclear. There's a lot of speculation as to how come she got involved at all. What is clear is that Eleanor was not afraid to defy the societal norms and stand up for the rights of her children and for herself. Eleanor had been seeking to expand her independent rule of Aquitaine for quite some time. Her powers had been limited. She did not control the majority of Aquitaine's revenue, nor the military. Both were still at Henry's disposal. In fact, when there was more than a few disputes in Aquitaine, she had to ask her husband for permission to dispense the military, and she wanted to be able to do this directly from now on. It is quite possible, and I agree with this, that Eleanor saw joining her son's rebellion as an opportunity to secure these rights that she had been looking for. While sons rebelling against their father was a tale as old as time, a wife rebelling against her husband in this way was unprecedented. While many scholars of this time period drew comparisons to different historical rebellions of sons, they really could not come up with anything that they could preach about in the pulpits about a woman rebelling against her husband in this manner. The rebellion by mother and sons to gain independent control over their lands was unfortunately over as quickly as it began. The princes ended up groveling at the feet of their father in 1174, and he forgave them all. Eleanor was not so lucky, unfortunately. She was put under house arrest by her husband as a punishment, and this punishment was to last for over a decade. She was let out occasionally for holiday celebrations, usually at Christmas time, and this may have helped to preserve some form of normalcy, if you can call the Plantagenet dynasty normal, which I don't think you can. King Henry's heir died, young Henry, and through a series of events, Eleanor's favorite son, Richard, became heir to the throne of England. And in 1189, Henry died. Richard's first act was to release his mother from jail. I think most who have endured such circumstances would be tempted to retire from public life. But Eleanor saw this as her second wave, her second chance at life, and she relished her newfound freedom. Her twilight years were to be her crowning glory. Since King Richard was more interested in making war and going on crusades than actually governing England, in fact, he only spent a matter of months there during his reign, the governing of England was left in the capable hands of his mother. In addition to ruling England and Aquitaine, Eleanor also took it upon herself to find her son a bride, and she settled on a woman named Berengaria of Navarre. She fetched this bride by once again crossing the Pyrenees at the age of 67 and and traveling down through the Alps. Eleanor personally delivered Berengaria to Cyprus for the wedding. Eleanor's time as the ruler in Richard's stead earned her much praise, which was a great stark contrast to the criticism she had suffered in her younger years. One theory of why she wasn't judged so harshly is because she was ruling in the stead of her son and acting in his behalf. The problem with her mother-in-law, the Empress Matilda, had been that she had sought the throne for herself rather than on behalf of her son. Eleanor retired from public life a few weeks before her death, which shows you how active she was up until her deathbed. She took to the Abbey of Fontevraud, where she's also buried. This was the first conventional move of Eleanor's life, as it was customary for queens to take the veil in an abbey in old age. A few weeks later, as I mentioned, at the age of 80, Eleanor passed from this world into the next in 1204. Most people didn't live past 50 in this time period, and to have done all the things that Eleanor did and lived to 80 is rather remarkable. And I think she left behind a legacy that was hard for anyone to beat, and I think that everyone should know more about her.
And what about Eleanor has inspired you in your own life?
Well, the first time I came across Eleanor was when I was in sixth grade and I was doing a book report, and I can't even remember what biography of hers I read, but I was so overcome by the fact that this woman seemed to have lived many lives and a life more exciting than most of the men in her period enjoyed. I loved that she traveled to all these places, and I really drew strength from the fact that she ruled in one way or another independently. My parents were going through a divorce at the time, and I thought it was rather remarkable that Eleanor had instigated her own divorce and come out the winner in the end by finding someone she loved to marry and rule the world with, so to speak. I really am just blown away by all the things she did, and if she can do these things in her lifetime, then I should be able to accomplish some of the things I want to today in 2012.
So true. Well, what about a book? Do you have one book that you would recommend so listeners can start learning more about Eleanor?
Absolutely. I would recommend, without a doubt, the biography Eleanor of Aquitaine by Alison Weir. And the other book I would recommend for youth, who, if you want to expose a younger girl to Eleanor, would be A Proud Taste for Scarlet and Miniver by E.L. Koningsberg. And it's just fantastic. It's a book where it's a historical fiction book, but it's very accurate. Eleanor is waiting in heaven to see whether her husband, Henry II, actually makes it up to heaven. And she reminisces about her life with a few other important figures up in heaven. And it's humorous, but informative all at the same time.
I love it. That's the educator in you recommending a youth book along with an adult book.
Yes. I want to get young girls excited about history, always.
Indeed, a noble cause. Well, there you have it for Eleanor of Aquitaine. Ashley, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
Thank you very much.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
I'm here to tell a story, something precious and fine, about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few. her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.